The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And we are back here on Analyze This, hour number two. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in Paradise. We got PSC Executive Director Donald Ducks-Cole joining us online. And of course, Director Cole, when you were a senator in the 30th, David Bourne used to be calling you. He was a private sector lawyer then. He used to be calling you so often, like he used to call me and when he wanted and harassing you and tell you I need you to help me with this and all that stuff. David Bourne, Attorney David Bourne.
Absolutely. We did the bill, the FSC bill, mm-hmm. If Attorney Bourne remember, helped shepherd that piece of legislation through. Attorney Bourne was one that spearheaded that, you know, that when we revised the FSC laws here in the territory. Yeah, he used to call me all the time.
He used to call me, good morning, Attorney Bourne. How are you?
Downtown revitalization,
good morning,
the whole walk.
Good morning, both of you.
Go ahead.
I guess my calling you must have worked, right?
Also, check this out. So we got a new name for Rehab. His name is Dong Dong David Bourne, man.
Dong Dong.
since you're doing revitalization, I want to ask you this question because I got a text message and Director Cole and Attorney Bourne, both of you actually are perfect to respond to this question. The question is, if the PSC needed reform, what areas would the PSC look at in reforming what it's supposed to provide for the people? Director Cole, you've been a senator, so you know about the legislative process and how you do things. Of course, remember now, the PSC is created through legislation. And you now worked on both sides, legislator and within the PSC. What areas do you think would need to be addressed if we were to reform the PSC? And Attorney Bourne, from a legal standpoint, maybe you could chime in there as well. Director Cole Fuss.
Well, Neville, you know that legislation have been at the legislature for over almost 15 years. Mm-hmm. And it was there with you. I remember when in your last committee, when you were chairing, we mm-hmm. were supposed to deal with a bill for Senator Sean Malone.
Correct.
There was a court ruling that came down that basically states that WAPA needs to be enjoined, and only the legislature can do that. And a lot of individuals believe enjoinment means micromanaging WAPA. That's not what it means. It means that WAPA would now be able to, when they go out for all of these big RFPs, you got to be able to come and say, hey, listen, let's take a look at this. Are you dealing with the right technology? Are you dealing with all of that? That's basically what it is, to enjoin, and then to, once you pass a rate, that whatever you pass that rate for, that the entity would put that in place and not take the rate and do whatever they want with it. And that's basically where the reform has to come. We talk about expertise on the board, and I know there are bills in the legislature to reform the expertise of who are members who are sitting on the board so that they can basically understand power generation, distribution, and all of that. So along the line, that looks good. And then the Bill of Rights, and Neville, I want to come on with you maybe sometime next week. We can set a time to talk about the Bill of Rights and the ability for the Public Services Commission to assist ratepayers in their complaints. And the legislature passed the Bill of Rights, and that needs to be implemented to streamline what is going on with ratepayers and the problems they're having with the customer service at the utility.
Now, Attorney Bourne, you're in the balancing act. You're working for the governor. The governor is trying to keep everybody happy, right? Investment, ratepayers on the residential and the commercial side, the legislature, because you don't want to really infringe on local statutes and federal law as well. From the governor's office, how do you go about trying to keep everybody happy? Because let's face it, our existence here, being that we're consumer-driven, is pretty much completely dependent on an energy system that is working at all levels in terms of affordability, reliability, efficiency?
Well, thank you again, both, and good morning to both of you and to the audience.
Morning.
Morning, again.
You hit it on the head that in trying to work on legislation or review legislation that comes up on this is a balancing act. And so I don't want to get into too much of what is or is not going to fly, because we know that there is some stuff pending at the legislature. But I do concur with Director Cole that there are some tweaks that we need to make to the operations of the PSC vis-a-vis, and we have to remember, PSC doesn't just regulate WAPA. So when you make adjustments to the PSC statute, you have to remember that there are other utilities, other public operations or private operations that the PSC also regulates, and those have to be balanced into the picture as well.
Absolutely.
Well, you know. In Government House, where you at now, you're pretty much the epicenter of everything in the Virgin Islands. The public's tolerance and patient levels ain't high. And that balancing act is critical because you don't want to undermine investment. You don't want to undermine the Virgin Islands Water and Power Authority because they still got to provide a service. You don't want you don't want to undermine the PSC because they still got to regulate, and then we don't want to end up in court. Because remember, I asked a question, and pretty much Director Cole was telling us, you know, there are a lot of things that we would like to do, but there's a third branch of government that can be accessed, and that could hamstring the PSC. That's what you're saying, right, Director Cole?
Absolutely, because the court interpreted the laws, and once they put it in, only the legislature can change. And, you know, we've been in court. As a matter of fact, we're still in court.
Yeah.
With a couple of cases. And it is clear that, you know, if we want to deal with this issue, we have to deal with it. I know the governor has been supportive, you know, of WAPA, and also been supportive of the Public Services Commission. But, you know, he sits in the middle, as you say, Neville, and he's trying to balance between everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The governor has been supportive. I think he signed the Bill of Rights, the Vote Payers Bill of Rights. I think he signed it. And he understands that ratepayers, you know, need to have that right. So he has been supportive, and he's under a lot of pressure. And like you say, you know, when I can't pay for my WAPA bill, it becomes problematic. So
well, you know, at the end of the day, right, WAPA is about passing on costs. So that's why it's important that it's efficient, affordable, and reliable.
Right.
Because if, in fact, the ratepayers, which include Donald Duck School, Neville James, and David Bourne.
Absolutely.
We don't want the public to think that just because I may be a radio talk show host, attorney.
And I'm the director.
You're director, and Attorney Bourne works for the governor.
That
we don't pay bills. We're taxpayers, too.
Yeah.
So it's important that everybody understands this affordability, efficiency, and reliability that I'm referring to affects everybody.
Everybody
across the table, and we got to work towards that. And Director Cole, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate
thank you, Neville,
your contribution.
And like I say, we got to set up a date. I need to discuss the bill of rights and authority that was granted, so we can assist these ratepayers. All right,
definitely. And Zoe is always in at work, and I will figure that out sometime next week. Okay.
All right, my brother. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, Attorney.
Good to hear you, Doc.
All right, bye bye.
Okay, good. So we got Attorney David Bourne on the line. Clearly. Last week, Monday, went well for about a half hour to 40 minutes. He liked it so much, he wanted to come back 1 week later. And we want him back as well. Because, Attorney Bourne, I see our little ferry boat. I think that's Moore's Left ferry boat walking away across from St. Croix to St. Thomas when I first started the show. So that means the cruise ship's coming. And we are working. No, that means activity taking place on the water. And we are working towards that end. First of all, let's give some details with respect to what's happening on Wednesday at 9 o'clock.
So, Neville, this is a follow-up community business forum on topics of concern to our business community across the territory. This is not a St. Thomas thing. This is not a St. John thing. This is not a St. Croix thing. It's an all-together, everybody getting information that they need to know about re-engaging in business and successful business after we had gone through all of this COVID madness. So the forum starts at 9 a.m. It's for an hour and a half only. It'll move quickly. It's going to focus on the cruise lines and what they are looking for to come, what they're looking for, but more particularly to give our local businesses a heads up as to what they should be prepared for for the cruise ships to come back. There are a number of things that we, if we're going to be successful at getting these passengers to not only come back, but get off the ship and do things that are going to be of importance. So to register for the forum, it's open to everybody, and it's virtual. It's just online, no physical presence. If you go to www.di.gov/CBF, and it will take you to the place to register for the forum. And then it will give you the link for the forum, which is Wednesday morning, March 24th at 9 a.m. And the forum this Wednesday is going to, again, feature the Royal Caribbean Group as representative of the overall cruise line industry of what they're looking to do. As everybody probably has heard, Royal Caribbean has made an announcement that they are going to set sail in the Eastern Caribbean with two ships, mm-hmm. Starting in June, although they have not yet received a CDC clearance to sail. The CDC clearance to sail is a requirement for them to depart from and to go to all U.S. ports, including the USVI.
Yeah.
So we are working. There's lots of discussion with the cruise line, dialogue with CDC in terms of what is going to be required of the cruise lines and what we can then expect in terms of putting into place instructions for local businesses and for the passengers to follow once they come back. Because believe you me, cruise lines no more want their passengers to come off the ship and pass the COVID virus to us or pick up the virus here than we want to either get a passing of the virus or to pass the virus on to the passengers.
Well, you know, this is a Royal Caribbean initiative. First and foremost, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break in about a minute. When we come back, though, I wanted to ask you about what about the other partners, the other players, specifically Carnival, which is the biggest player. Right. And then we also have MSCs, who is a partner with the Virgin Islands for a number of years, right? And Disney as well. And, of course, right. You spoke about how important of a role the CDC is going to play in this, because they're going to determine timeline based on their decision-making in the Center for Disease Control. So I want to talk about that a little bit and how your the Brian Roach administration is going about from a communication standpoint with the CDC and the cruise ship industry so that the triangulation works for everybody. Analyze this. We got Attorney David Bourne, General Counsel for the Governor of the Virgin Islands. We'll be back right after this.
You may be eligible for credit on your Via mobile, internet, or landline service through the Lifeline program. Lifeline is a federal program for qualifying low-income customers that lowers the monthly cost of important communication services. If you receive Medicaid, SNAP, housing assistance, or other government aid, a Lifeline credit may be available to you.
Contact Via at 340-777-8492 or visit the website via.vi/lifeline to see if you qualify.
Hi, this is Tara. I was scrolling through my newsfeed and saw Vitima's post. The coronavirus vaccine is here and available. I've been getting a little tired of reading about this pandemic stuff, but still ain't trying to get it or give it to anybody in my family, especially Grandma G. She lives with us. So I called the number 340-777-8227, shared some info, and got an appointment a few days later near our home, and for Grandma G too. Talk to your family. Let folks know signing up for the shot was quick, easy, and will save lives. Put the number in your contacts. 340-777-VACS. And choose to be a part of the solution. Take your best shot against COVID-19. Get the vaccine.
Presented by the Office of the Governor, Vitima, and the Department of Health.
And we are back here on Analyze This, and we are fortunate to be joined by Attorney David Bourne. He is counsel for the Governor of the Virgin Islands, Governor Albert Bryan Jr. Good morning once again, Counselor.
Good morning again.
Now, David, before we get back into the areas that we're talking about with the triangulation, with the cruise ships, the CDC, and us as a territory, a year ago, 52 weeks ago from today, a year ago from tomorrow, the governor had to shut down the territory. My question to you is, what was it like when all I was sitting on there, all that brain power up there in Government House, and I had to arrive at this decision, given what we were dealing with the pandemic in its infancy stage, and we were 10 days into having our first positive case here in the territory, because it was Friday, March 13th, 2020, when we announced the first positive case. What was all of that like? Explain to the public the dichotomy and all the run-ins that were going on when you had to make a very strong decision and implement the safe at home designation to at least show the public that you were how serious this matter was and the extent to which the administration had to lay down a heavy hand to protect the people in some instances from ourselves.
Well, first of all, Neville, it was downright scary because here it is. You've got something that you don't know what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing the. Remember, at that point, we were just having violent, almost death cases that they didn't know what to do with, and of course, we had to make some very tough decisions. To protect the health and welfare of the people of the territory. And it was not a decision that was lightly made. We had to get a whole lot of information. The governor, unfortunately, was the person with the ultimate decision-making authority, but the group of us that were surrounding him with getting and filtering the information that had to be considered. It was tough. And it was especially tough when you are going to say, we have to close down everything in the territory, all the businesses, except the most essential. That was a critical time and a critical decision to be made.
Now, we're using the word balance a lot. I am, because every time the governor has implemented the most extreme executive order, which is the stay at home, right? Designation.
Right.
The number
that was the first one.
Yeah, the numbers have responded in kind, where there was a time, I would say sometime in late April, early May, where we didn't even have any active cases here in the Virgin Islands because the stay at home designation had worked so well for us. But then at the same time, the governor has a responsibility to make sure that the private sector, the businesses, exist, because you don't want to put too much pressure on everybody, because there's a domino effect. If the businesses ain't working, ain't opening, then the government struggles from a revenue generation standpoint. So how do we go about finding, how did we go about over the last year, go about finding or trying to find, we're probably still doing it right now, this happy medium where we could live with minimal positive cases and at the same time experience some normalcy in terms of how we were living prior to COVID-19?
Well, the hardest thing, Neville, is that it's to get people to understand that it's what the governor is asking you to do is real. If you remember, we were doing pretty well, and then we opened, and there was a spike in August.
July, really. Late June, early July here on St. Croix with the refinery.
Well, that happened as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what has saved us is that we have reacted to these instances quickly and decisively, and we have done every effort to try to, again, use the same word, balance the economic interest with the health interest. Everybody wants to come out to go to work, to play, and at the same time, everybody also wants to have money flowing in the economy. It's very hard to balance all of that together, but it comes back to each of us being responsible people, that we must take the precautions seriously. We have, and unfortunately, it is the younger group of our people who are not taking it as seriously as they should. They feel pent up at home, understand. They want to have social activity. But there's a reason for the policies that we implemented, the masking, the social distancing, the not collecting in large groups, because those have proven to be the spikes. I mean, you've seen it around the country. They had the spike after all of the major holidays when people or events when people got together, and here it is again with the spring break activity in Miami. They are fearful now that they're going to have a serious outbreak.
So right now in Miami Beach, they got big problem. A state of emergency was declared because of spring break activity.
Right. Exactly. It isn't because we're trying to clamp down on people's lives or some people would say we're infringing on their rights. It's that we are trying to save people's lives. And that same thing happens when you consider how we bring back the cruise ships, how we bring back tourists. We've been complimented to the max with the procedures that we have in place for people coming in by air, logging in their protocol and having it examined before they arrive to see if they're positive or not, requesting that the visitors follow the same rules that we do with masking, because we are trying to protect people's health and life. And we may be doing pretty well, and we're a lot of people are getting vaccinated. And that's the other thing. Now we have an additional help in the form of the vaccine, which everybody should get, because that is what is going to help us go past this stage into something where we can function in somewhat of a normal sense. I use that somewhat very, very broadly, because nothing is back to normal yet, and we don't know if we'll ever get back to pre-COVID normal. We're going to have to get used to these new regimes of how we do business, how we live, because it is such a volatile virus. It spreads so easily that people really have to take these precautions seriously.
Question from one of my regulars. What about the CDC's new 3 feet social distancing mandate as opposed to 6 by cutting it in half? How is the administration looking at that?
Well, that's the guideline for the schools, and you know, we're using the CDC as our science. So we are trying to work on that implementation, but all the other guidelines are still in place. And as I say, for the cruise lines, we don't know yet what they are going to impose for that. That is still a work in progress. But I must say, going back to a question you asked earlier, we're working with all of the cruise lines. This week's forum is co-sponsored by Royal Caribbean Group, and they have their own collection of ships. But we have been working with all of the cruise lines in the FCCA grouping as to all of them setting up a protocol as to how they would return to the territory. And I must emphasize, Neville, all of the cruise lines have indicated firmly and directly to us that they all intend and want to return to the territory. So it's not that we're by talking about Royal Caribbean that we're excluding anybody else. All of the cruise partners want to come back to the territory, but it's going to be in a different way than they were before.
Interesting. Now, let's talk on what you're hearing from Carnival, Disney, and MSC, because I know we're right now communicating with Royal Caribbean. They've taken the initiative, but what about the others? Are they just waiting for CDC guidelines, or are they already in talks with us? Because it appears that there is a possibility the Virgin Islands is going to be very attractive as it relates to cruise ship activity.
It will be very attractive. We are in discussions with everybody, with all the lines, but everybody needs to have the guidance of CDC. What Royal Caribbean did in terms of going to the Eastern Caribbean is to set their own guidance and not wait for CDC, something that we cannot do. But we are working with the cruise lines to try to press the CDC to issue those so that Carnival and MSC and Disney and all the others, including the smaller boats as well, will be able to come back with guidance so we know, not just we, but of course the passengers. Right? That's the biggest element. So once the passengers get on board the ship, they need to know, they need to have guidance as to what they can and cannot do in getting off the ship, which is where we want to benefit. It's not much use to us for the ship to simply pull into port and stay at the dock.
Interesting. So our Department of Health is playing a big, big role in serving as a conduit between the administration and CDC, is what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in point of fact, one of the things that we're going to be unveiling on Wednesday is that our Department of Health is coming up with a healthy business program, which is a certification program. It's still in the works. It's not final. But it's a certification program whereby a business can get a review and a certificate that you can post on the door of the business that indicates that the business has gone through checking by the Department of Health and has a rating of how healthy the business is. So that will be able to help people before you, and it's not just for the tourists, it's for the residents as well. Before you walk into a business, you can tell whether they have gone through this healthy business certification process or not.
One of the things that our listeners like to do is they like to allow for the conversation to flow, so they don't call in, they don't text the questions to me. Here's another question. Is there anything that you would have done retrospectively differently over the last year, or do you think are you comfortable with the decisions that were made periodically? Stay at home, safe at home, back to stay at home, things of that nature, or closing schools, what have you?
Well, I don't want to speak for the governor per se, but I'll tell you one of the things that he kept repeating, and I think is really the guide, is that there was no guidebook for this. Mm-hmm. Everybody was going by the seat of their pants as to what might or might not work. I know that hindsight is 2020, but I think from where we were in each of the decisions made, I think those were all good decisions, not necessarily the best decision all the time, but again, there's that balancing that we have to go through for the best interest of not just one sector, but for the overall community benefit.
Let me ask this question. You remember that weekend when we were at 22 positives and then we had this situation where we heard this one household in St. Thomas had 8 of them and the number jumped from 22 to 30. And we were pretty much in a self-inflicted panic mode where, oh my gosh, this thing could go totally haywire. Yeah. And then the next thing you know, for like the next 2 months, we hardly had any positives here in the territory. What was that like?
Right. Well, that's the thing. You know, you don't know with these things, and you don't know, you know, where the next outbreak is going to come from. We hear stories about, you know, they have these parties in Atlanta, mm-hmm. Orlando,
all that stuff. Yeah, then they want to come back and bring this thing.
And they come back, you know, they all fly together. They come back, they, you know, insert themselves back into the community. And if we didn't have the reconnaissance that these things were happening, you would wonder, well, why is this bump? But if you go back and you look at the history, you referenced the bump we had with Hovensa, mm-hmm. with Lantry. That was just when they were importing employees, contractors, for work at the plant. And so we very quickly scrambled. The refinery was a champ in terms of working with us to put into place a procedure, and we nipped it. They got everybody tested, but you don't know where the next surge is going to come from,
that's right.
And that is the dilemma of making a decision.
Yeah, the uncertainty dynamic is real. We're going to take our final break. We got Attorney David Bowen. We're going to talk to him for about 10 more minutes, get some more details about Wednesday with this first of a series of forums. We'll be back right after this.
Resolutions. New financial plan. At Bank of St. Croix, we offer a suite of consumer and business services, including home and auto loans. With online banking, you can bank with us from anywhere 24/7. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay, 340-773-8500, and one in Peters Rest, 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix. BankofStCroix.com.
DPNR State Historic Preservation Office is soliciting applications for historic preservation projects at properties damaged by Hurricanes Irma and Maria. Properties must be listed in or eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places to be able to apply for assistance. This program will prioritize historic contributing properties located within the historic districts of Charlotte-Amalie, Christiansted, Frederickstead, and Cruz Bay. Award amounts may range from $10,000 to $200,000 with no match required. An application package can be requested by sending an email to historic.recovery@dpnr.vi.gov or by applying online at dpnr.vi.gov or call the State Historic Preservation Office at 340-776-8605 for more information. The final deadline for applications has been extended to Wednesday, March 31st.
And we are back here. Of course, March is World Water Month. Today is World Water Day. UVI, they have a series of webinars this month. Today, they have a health and climate impacts, safe drinking water, and water quality in your community webinar. It goes from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. today, and the speakers include community health officials and water testing and filtration companies. Okay, so today from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., go on the UVI website, and you can be guided as to how to link in to the webinar. Attorney David Bowen, thank you very much for joining us once again.
I'm glad to be here.
Okay, good. So you're making up for because next week Monday gonna make 11 months of on the show, and you ain't been on for the first 10 and a half. But you're making up in a very, very awesome way because you've been on last week Monday to come again this week. I'm so thankful. I might even carve out a little 20 minutes for you on Thursday so you could tell me how Wednesday went. So you know we're in a good mood. We're in a good mood. It's a beautiful day from here on St. Croix. How's the weather over there in St. Thomas? I forget to ask Doc School, so I'm gonna let you be my meteorologist. How's the weather in St. Thomas today, sir?
Weather is gorgeous. A nice breeze, sunny. Lots of good weather.
Good thing. No, I gonna ask you this question because you know I'm a history major, and I ain't gonna let you get with this thing. I let you get with last month, and I've never spoken to you or Michael about it. Edith Bowen is who to David and Michael Bowen?
Edith Bowen was a mother to David, Michael, David, Stephen, and Michael.
Okay, good. That's number one. Number two, you know the first time I saw her name, she was actually on a short list to be selected by Wang Louis to be his lieutenant governor. I remember reading that in a St. Croix Avis. That's factual, right? To your knowledge?
Comment, never. I think so, but I don't want to.
Yes.
I don't want to
You are doing.
Reveal secrets, so to speak.
We're only 43 years removed from that decision that was made. Only 43. But you know what? Go ahead.
But you know, if she sort of made up for it a little later, I can't remember the year, but she considered running herself.
Yes. Yes.
Actually, I guess it was 81 because it was the year I came back from law school. So.
Oh, David, you're a baby, man. 81. You graduated from law school in 81?
Yes, wow. Sir.
I was only going from 11th to 12th grade in 81, having graduated in 82. What law school was lucky to have you as a student?
I went to Villanova Law School.
Oh, really?
Just outside of Philadelphia. Yeah.
Villanova, okay. The Wildcats. Okay, I hear you.
The law school is known for making workaholics.
that's good. So best case scenario, worst case scenario. How soon can we look at these 50% capacity cruise ships working its way back into the Virgin Islands? I mean, we're keeping our fingers crossed because we want to make sure, from a health standpoint, that the health interests are given the highest priority over our economic interests, which we appreciate because our taxi drivers and the hospitality industry has taken a hit for the last 12 months.
Yeah, and by the way, Neville, since you mentioned that, one part of the forum that we're going to have is what we call survivor stories, mm-hmm. businesses, and one of them is a taxi person. How they managed to survive the COVID, but the timing of when is a big question mark because it's not within our control. It's not within the control of the cruise lines either. That is entirely left to when the CDC issues the guidelines. When the CDC does publish the guideline for resuming sailing, the cruise lines have said that they can be back in cruising mode within 90 days of that order.
Okay.
So we are hoping, we are trying, we're pushing, we're trying to make it understood to the CDC that this is a matter of importance, not just for us, but for all of the areas that are dependent upon cruise lines, places like Miami, places West Coast, you know, up and down the East Coast. Mm-hmm. We're all in this together trying to get the CDC to issue something.
One of my biggest concerns would be you got people from certain states who really have no respect for mask wearing, what have you. And you actually see the different video clips where they're actually intentionally basically telling you, I'm going to go where I want and I ain't wearing no mask. And you ain't going to question my civil liberties. And of course, you know, when they pay the money to go on a cruise line and they're traveling, they even want to believe they got more rights than they actually do. And they could be coming off ships, you know, not wearing masks, not following guidelines. This is not as easy as people want to think it is with just a decision being made by CDC or the cruise lines. It requires a lot of due diligence on our part to put the protective measures in place to protect not only the passengers, but more importantly, the residents of the Virgin Islands.
And this is where we are working with the cruise lines. So it's a relationship thing of where we are making sure they put in guidelines for the people on board the ship so that the requirements that they have to follow to come off the ship. You can't just like walk off the ship. You have to be retested. And on the same hand, if they understand that when they're on shore, they must follow our guidelines as well.
That's right.
That's where this collaboration
and teamwork is important.
Collaboration is a good word, between Department of Health, the Department of Tourism, the cruise lines, the CDC, and CBP, some of these are maybe coming from foreign ports as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not a something that goes on. It's going to go on overnight. We really have to be very careful that we don't misstep how we open the relationship.
I appreciate you making yourself available last Monday and again today. I wish you well on Wednesday. Final question. While we're cognizant and mindful of protecting the public and dealing with the realities of COVID-19 and dealing with the pandemic, we're in the vaccination phase now, and we're hoping to achieve a goal of herd immunity. By the way, I see that the number of vaccinations is at the 33,000 level, and the governor's goal of 50,000 by July is realistic, sir. Congratulations. In that regard.
Well, we're trying.
I know. We'll try to make that happen. But we got to walk and chew gum at the same time. Other aspects of life must go on, right?
Absolutely.
COVID
is one thing, but you have so many other things going on. I mean, for instance, we're not trying to figure out explicitly what we got out of the American Rescue Plan Act. The stimulus act that just came out,
$586 million from a dollar standpoint.
Well, but you got to figure out which bucket mm-hmm. it goes into,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what agencies then, and how you can use the monies, what the restrictions are, because there are still things that it are very emphatic you cannot use it for, we're now in that process. Of filtering through that stuff.
Good. And working with the delegate in that regard?
Yes, very much so, working with the delegate and working on the delegate on some further legislation that would give us some additional benefits as well.
And we have a newly placed Secretary of Interior. The governor's reaching out to her. You're making sure that the governor... establishing links with the Secretary of Interior. You're supposed to. That's your gig. You talk to council, the Secretary of Interior office.
Yes.
So
we keep that channel open big time. Because,
yes.
That's our lifeblood of they're the ones that do most of the begging and asking
mm-hmm.
on our behalf. So it's important to keep the channel open, and we do.
And Ronnie Russell and I, we were talking about this. Have you guys ever considered a joint letter from the other insular possessions as it relates to vaccinations to accelerate our vaccination potential, given from a residential standpoint that our numbers are not that high, pretty much a drop in the bucket compared to the big number. I mean, 330 million people nationwide, maybe 450,000 between us, Guam, American Samoa, and Northern Mariana. Not including Puerto Rico, because they're treated differently.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, our problem is not getting the vaccine. We have been able to get a full supply of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Our problem is getting our people to
take
the vaccine.
Buy in.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is the problem.
Okay.
And that's where I think you've heard the jingles and the ads and all that, of trying to get people to understand that it's important for them to be vaccinated, because it's not a cure, but it certainly reduces the impact of the virus should you be exposed to it.
Mm-hmm. And all I go to is tell them, don't forget, when you are small, you get a vaccine for measles and mumps and polio,
exactly.
And those things, and you didn't have a problem with it when you were young. Don't take it on now.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, as a child, I know we all signed up for all those things, for tetanus and
mm-hmm.
Polio and all of that. And that's why we don't have those things anymore. Or
at least. I think the little concern is warp speed. The warp speed nature of it and how quick it was, but at the end of the day, I don't think they would do anything that would threaten our existence as a people on this planet. A lot of work was done there, and we got to trust the scientists because they're looking out for us. And we've invested trillions of dollars in medicine anyway. So it's time now for that investment to actually work to our benefit. Attorney David Bourne, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thursday.
Thank you.
Thursday. Breakdown, Ollie. 8:05. 8:05 Thursday. I'll give you 10 minutes to let me know how Wednesday went. Okay?
You want me to report in?
You got to report. I'm going to check with Christine Lett and set it up so you can call in early in the 8 o'clock hour on Thursday. Okay?
All right. Good, buddy. And thank you for giving us the promo.
Quickly. Registration again. You want to go over that real quickly?
Yeah. Registration is if you go to www.vi.gov/CBF. It'll take you to the registration information, and you can register at 9 a.m. to 10:30 on Wednesday, March 24th. And we're going to be talking about what we need to get ourselves as businesses ready for throughout the territory. And I reemphasize, cruise lines are not just looking to come back to St. Thomas. They want very much to come to St. Croix. So this is a everybody on board forum, and we'll also have some information from the Department of Health and Port Authority, and we'll have some survivor stories of various kinds of businesses that have gone through the difficulties of COVID and how they made it.
I got some good news for you. The producer, let me know. We're going to give you a Thursday to recoup yourself. So Friday morning, during the 8 o'clock, hour, you're good to go. Okay? So you don't have to report immediately. You got 48 hours to do your thing. Thank you very much again, Counsel. Glad to hear from you.
Thank you so much.
You got it. That's Attorney David Bourne from the governor's office. We're looking at a restart with reduced capacity of cruise ships coming into the Eastern Caribbean here in the Virgin, in this region. And that is what today's discussion is about. Wednesday, 9 to 10:30. There's a forum, and we'll repeat the address tomorrow again, and probably early in the first hour on Wednesday, where you can go on to and see how we're going about reincorporating that part of our industry, our life. Here in the Virgin Islands, with all of the protections. I always remember that. Let me look over some numbers here real good. Nationally, COVID numbers, 29.8 million. This is New York Times today, okay? 29.8 million cases, 541,937 deaths yesterday, right? 34,217 cases, 444 deaths. Condolences to all, and even though the number is reduced because it's a Sunday, it's not good. And hospitalizations is now under 40,000 nationally at 39,333. Okay, the Dow closed on Friday at 32,627.97. It was down 234.33 points, just over 0.7%. 9 of the 30 blue chip stocks saw gains, 21 saw losses. Okay? Want to thank Gabrielle Lojero from the National Weather Service, Senate Vice President Novell Francis, PSC Director Donald Ducks Cole, and legal counsel for the Governor of the Virgin Islands, David Bourne, for joining us this morning. Great show. Thank you very much, TJ, Tristan Jones, for running thing on the board. Great show today to start the week. It's a beautiful day in paradise, like I said. But, we got to do what we got to do to make sure things remain the same. Don't forget the women's basketball team tournament Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week, okay? Puerto Rico on Wednesday, Costa Rica on Thursday, Dominican Republic on Friday, Cuba on Sunday, and then host nations El Salvador on Sunday. Cuba's on Saturday. 5 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. on Sunday. On that note, do enjoy the remainder of your day. We'll be back tomorrow. Be good and be safe. Bye-bye.
expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.